Do you need help tackling social media for your loved one? You're not alone. Things like cyberbullying, sexting, helping to keep them safe, catfishing. Do you even know what that means? Managing screen time. And what about notification overload? And there's something called netiquette. And then there's teaching netiquette. And we're going to talk about managing consequences and how you might be able to do that using positive behavior support. And we have some real life guidance from our panelists on things that they have done and things that we can do, whether you're just starting out or you have young adults. Everyone, please tell us where you're coming from, what state you're coming from, and also what brought you here. You can let us know in the chat. And I'm Shantae, and welcome to Parenting Special Needs Live. Tonight's family chat will focus on social media and helping our loved ones with the demands of a virtual world. I would like to welcome everyone, and I'd also like to let you know that Marsha Quinn and Flip Gray will get this chat started, so please help me in welcoming them. Marsha, take it away.
Hi, everybody. Welcome, 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 like Shantae said. I'm super excited to be here myself and to talk about a very timely topic. And we have some great family stories to share. I have some personal connections. And just to understand, staying connected is obviously a part of our social well-being, more for others than some. And with a device and the click of an icon, we can have access to the world through over 100 programs and applications. And the world has access to us and our loved ones. It can be daunting and overwhelming to navigate, but this evening we will share concerns and helpful tips to ensure healthy and safe social media connections for our loved ones with disabilities. These family chats are led and sponsored by parents and professionals from Parenting Special Needs Magazine, Home and Community PBS Network, Parent to Parent USA, Positive Behavior Supports Corporation, and the Partnership for People with Disabilities at Virginia Commonwealth University.
Thanks, Marsha. Shantae, happy to be here.
Yeah.
Well, to add to our intro here, I think that this conversation, many are coming thinking, oh, this is a tweens and teens conversation, and it really isn't. Electronics are put into the hands of babes at earlier and earlier ages. Recently was out with a group of friends. We're all adults and one had a 2-year-old. And as we were at a bridal show, trying on dresses, the 2-year-old was there and mom handed that child a phone, and boy, she navigated that better than I think I could, flipping through YouTube and photos and the whole nine yards. And if it wasn't for mom having her in her lap and watching what she was doing, that could have gone awry. But that was a great modeling experience. And it was a real awakening for myself as the mother of a 14 and 18-year-old, that this happened sooner and sooner now. And it also made me kind of think a moment that I have a 14 and 18-year-old, and they've had devices in their hands for a long time, and I didn't know this information. And so I was just kind of giving them access to the world and the world access to them. And now issues are coming up. So I cannot wait to hear the stories that the panelists here have, that you as an audience have to bring to the table, and some real life guidance on what do we do, whether we're just starting out or our children, whether they are very young or adults, now have devices and we need to provide them guidance because we're always parents. Yeah, phones are so different now. I'm older, and many of you can relate. I was used to the corded phone. All you did was talk to somebody, but now it's your calculator. It's a GPS tracker. It's a calendar. It's access to the internet, literally in your hands. It's so much more than just a telephone. So Looking forward to the conversation, and I can't wait to see what you all have come to the conversation with.
You know, and I just like to add a little something that these are going to be some raw conversations. There's going to be some sharing that it's our world, it's our reality. And so I know we want to talk about things that are happening, but we also want to put into some preventative measures for you, tools that you can take away from this event, and know that we're just nipping this at, you know, the surface. There's so much more that we could share with you, but I think we have a really great outline for our discussion.
So true, Marcia. And I think you had started this in our practices with you put up your show or your movie, and now they show you all those sensors. Like, it could contain alcohol, cursing, sex, you know, whatever.
yeah, the Netflix labels. Yeah.
Shantae, do you want to take it over and introduce?
I do. I'm Shantae, as we said before, and I'm also the founder and publisher of Parenting Special Needs Magazine, and bringing this live to you all. I also am a mother of two children, two daughters, and my youngest daughter has special needs, and therefore that's why we have Parenting Special Needs. So I'm thrilled to have this all of these panelists with us to share, because it's a wealth of information and we're always, always learning. Like, I've been on the journey for 25 years. I'm still learning. And I am going to pass the virtual microphone to Molly Dellinger Ray. Take it away.
You're muted, Molly.
I have my voice back. I'm Molly Dellinger Ray from the Partnership for People with Disabilities at Virginia Commonwealth University on a rainy night in Richmond, Virginia. I'm thrilled to be here and love to help out. You're not going to hear much from me. I am monitoring the chat on Facebook. So Matthew and Rose, I know you're out there. If you want to make comments, shoot them into the Facebook chat and I'll be sure to share them with the panelists. And I'm passing it off to Marcia Quinn right now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Marcia. I'm coming in from snowy Seattle, Washington, which isn't the norm, but it's beautiful out. My role is co-director for Parent to Parent USA, but first and foremost, I am a parent of two young men who are now 20 and 23 who are on the autism spectrum. So excited to be here and lovely company. I'd like to pass it off to Tara.
Good evening, everybody. I am coming to you from sunny South Florida. I work with Positive Behavior Supports Corporation, and I'm a board certified behavior analyst. I'm happy to help guide some of the conversations and help answer maybe any questions that you might have. I am also the mother of two teenage boys. And I'm gonna pass the virtual mic to Claudia Axelrod.
Hello, everybody. I'm Claudia Axelrod. I also work for PBS Corporation. I am an analyst, a clinical director there, but more than that, I am also a parent of three beautiful children, and my youngest one now 19, who can believe that? You know, I'm also from the era of the cord of the phone, right? My 19-year-old now has been diagnosed with autism 2, and hence why I became an analyst and why I'm here with you sharing our stories. I always love being here and very excited because I think we all learn from each other. And I'm going to pass it on to Laura Kerr.
Hi, everyone. I'm Laura, and I'm a professor at University of South Florida and do a lot of work with PBIS, Positive Behavior Intervention Supports in schools. But I'm here today as a parent of a teenager with autism, ADHD, and anxiety. And we are actually on vacation, and I was so excited because he said he packed. And I was very excited, and I opened up the suitcase, and what he packed was all his computer supplies. So he wanted to make sure that he had his gel pad and his mouse, et cetera. So we are in the thick of dealing with all of this computer stuff, and hopefully share some of what we're learning along the way and learn from you guys, because we need a little bit of help. Passing it over to Flip.
Hey, everyone, again, my name is Flip Gray. I'm from Virginia, and I also am a parent. I have a 14 and an 18-year-old. My 18-year-old has multiple disabilities, and I can't wait to hear all these stories and all of the great information to help support both of my girls. And I also work for Virginia Commonwealth University and the Center for Family Involvement, helping parents of children with disabilities. Molly, no, Zipporah.
Hi, everyone. I'm Zipporah Levy Shackelford. I'm known online and around the area as Dr. Z. I am the founder of and the behavior and education consultant for Creative Approach Development Center, also in Virginia. So also getting some of that rain. And more importantly, and like some of the others that shared that have gotten into the field, I got into the field because I'm a parent of special needs children. I have four children. My oldest just turned 22. And he's on the autism spectrum. And then I have a 16-year-old and a 10-year-old on the autism spectrum. And my 10-year-old also has a rare form of Down syndrome. So always happy to be a part of conversations like this where we can compare notes and modify them to make them even better. So I'm really excited. And I will be managing the chat for you guys tonight. And I will pass it back to Tara.
Thank you very much, everybody. I'm so excited. What a great group of panelists and, you know, expert parents. I think we're here to learn from one another tonight. And I want to just, you know, take a moment. We want to hear from all of you, you know, our viewers out there. We've kind of put a list of concerns together that, you know, these are things that we've either gone through in our own lives with our own families or with the families that we've worked with. So as I read through these, think about, you know, why are you here tonight? What brought you here? And if you think about your loved one and their use of social media, have you found that maybe they're not sleeping enough? Are they, you know, maybe staying up late in their bedroom saying that they're going to sleep, but yet you check on them at 2 a.m. and they're still up, you know, playing those games or chatting with friends? Are they not getting enough physical activity? I see this with my, you know, two teenage sons, certainly would prefer to stay inside than go outside in this hot Florida heat and they're on their, you know, electronics. Do you find that there's not enough focus on the schoolwork? Or is there an unhealthy need for approval or attention? Do you find that your loved one's sense of self-worth is oftentimes dictated or mediated by the number of likes they get or the positive or negative comments they get from their posts? Do you find that possibly there's not enough like that true face-to-face interaction because they're able to better navigate, you know, social encounters through their media? Are they becoming sexualized too soon? Are they, you know, exposed to those things that we possibly wouldn't really want them to be or something that we're not ready to yet explain to them? Maybe there's not enough personal privacy, or maybe they do a lot of oversharing. We're going to talk a lot about this and some preventative strategies to help our loved ones not to share those, you know, personal and private pieces of information about them or yourselves. Maybe they're exposed to sexual predators. We know that, you know, the online, while we think everybody out there wants to be our friend and has a good heart, we found that it's quite the opposite at times. So we want to make sure that our loved ones are aware of that. Some of them might be exposed to hate speech. It might inhibit your loved one and their ability to focus. We find that those that tend to have those ADHD and ADD diagnoses, that they're just pulled in so many different zones of social media. And then, of course, you know, being bullied virtually. And some of them, you know, may not even realize that they are being bullied. But when we follow those threads or, you know, hear from what they're saying and hear their concerns, we recognize that this is bullying behavior. So if you want to share with us, we'd love to hear from you. Are any of those reasons why you're here tonight? Is there anything that we've missed and possibly another reason that you're here? We'd love to hear that. And I want to ask the ladies that are monitoring the chat, are there any chats coming through? Any themes that we're seeing?
I do not see any in the chat right now, but I do know as a parent and also as a provider, like all, I think all of these definitely are right on topic. And then we also have someone who's just said that their son accidentally got access to pornography. So that is also another major concern too.
Absolutely. You know, and I want us to think as parents too, as caregivers, and we don't have to share this, but as we're talking about this, in what ways has our own behavior surrounding the use of social media affected our children? Are we, you know, on social media all the time? Are we constantly you know, on Facebook or, you know, any of those other media sites, and we're not even focusing during dinner or having those family times any longer? Do we spend more time there than we do with the face-to-face in the real world? You know, what is your behavior there, and has it kind of led to your child's behavior? So just think about that as we talk through this. And I'm going to move the slide. And, you know, I'd love to hear, Marcia, I think you're going to kick us off here. These are just some of, you know, the one of the main concerns that we're seeing from when we get feedback from the loved ones that we work with or our own children. And if you can share a story for us.
Yeah, you bet. I think she's, Tara's setting up the stage for, you know, what are our objectives today? And what are some of the current concerns that we put together as panelists? Obviously, privacy, security, sexting, screen time management guidelines, and overall netiquette for social media and our electronic devices. So today we're going to provide you with some tools. We're going to tie in positive behavior support so that there are some preventative measures as well as posts to curb those behaviors. And I'll obviously give you some apps and resources to help you. And I think the word on there came up, catfishing. And I think Laura had a pretty great story to share. So I'm gonna pass it over to you, Laura.
Thank you. Yeah, it wasn't a term I had knew about at all. When first time I heard about it, I thought it was literally like a cartoon of a cat fishing, and I was like, oh, that's cute. But it actually did happen to us. My son was really wanted a girlfriend, which I thought was really great because he's a teenager. I'm like, that is just wonderful. And he texted me, I was at work, and he said, Mom, you're going to be upset. I have a girlfriend. And I thought, oh, okay. And he said, well, it's one of my online friends. And I said, oh, okay. I'm like, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, can you send me a picture? Is this a real person? And he sent me a picture, and it was a young looking girl. And I was like, okay, you know, that looks okay. Let me talk to you about what you can share, what you can't, et cetera. And that relationship was done within 24 hours. So I thought, okay, we've weathered this, we are good. About a year later, I would check in with him every so often, say, are there any more online girlfriends or anything, like you know, try to monitor the chat. About a year later, he had another girlfriend. And this one, he didn't want to share the picture. And I was like, well, why don't you want to share a picture? This is like really important for us to know that this is a person. And we had a conversation. He's like, well, I've been chatting with this person for a while. It's a person. I play games online with this person. Luckily, he has a peer in school who was able to, they got a picture, and the friend found out that this was a stock picture, and it was just somebody took it off the internet and said that it was a real person. And when we dug a little bit deeper, we're pretty sure it was a male, probably predatory situation. We freaked out, looked at the online chatter, et cetera, and they were chatting within the game program. So we could kind of look and see the history, but it was a little bit difficult. And what we found was that the language from the person was kind of suggestion and kind of trying to get pictures of my son, et cetera. And luckily we had set rules and said, you can't send pictures, especially if you don't have clothes, you can't overshare, et cetera. But we weren't totally sure, because we only had limited access to the chat, how much was going on and how long. We stopped it, we cut it off, we reported the person, et cetera. But that was when we learned what catfishing actually was, and that we had actually experienced it, and my son had, and hopefully we're monitoring a little bit better now as we go along. But it was a real eye-opening experience to know that that had happened in what we thought we were monitoring in a safe environment. So that would be my story to pass back to you guys.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, Laura. I mean, I think that really leads us into a good segue. We want to talk about ways to keep our loved ones safe online. And so, you know, we have to think about what behaviors do our loved ones engage in that could cause a concern. Maybe they could get in trouble with the law. Maybe they put themselves in a risk, right? We want to make sure that we're keeping them safe. So when we think about the behaviors that they engage in, such as, you know, falling, you know, prey to catfishing, or somebody in the chat put, you know, exposure to pornography, how do we help them? What preventative strategies or measures can we add to the environment that could help prevent some of these things. And that's what we really need to think about. And I think, you know, Shantae, and sometimes it's not even the preventative into the environment, but it's those little triggers that could solicit that unwanted behavior from our loved one. And we don't even recognize that it's happening. And Shantae, you wanna share a story about your daughter and how this occurred, you know, just from her engaging in her favorite, you know, behavior and what triggered these behaviors for her.
Yeah, no, I really wanna share because I want other parents to know because we did not know. We uncovered a trigger that was really my daughter's behavior was spiraling out of control. I mean, she was just becoming very aggressive, even to the point that she was becoming aggressive, not only with us, but she was becoming aggressive with like her companion, which typically she would only be more aggressive with family members, but she was becoming aggressive with her companion. And we just couldn't figure out exactly what was going on with her. And during this time we went on a vacation and she decided she was going to leave her iPhone and her iPad at home, her choice. And the whole family was just amazed of what a calmer child she was during this time. We were like, really, it was eye-opening. So that was only on a vacation for a week. But when we came back, you know, obviously the behaviors again started to ramp back up. And so we thought we were being proactive and we limited the time that she could be on the iPhone and the iPad and all of that kind of stuff. But it didn't really seem to be helping. And what we discovered, because her behavior got to the point that it was really becoming problematic, her behavior therapist came, and thank goodness that she's young and technically savvy. And she found out that what was happening with Kaylee on her iPad and her phone was that different alerts and notifications from about 8 different apps were going off all the time. So you can imagine if you've ever had someone be on a thread and you've got the ding, 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 she was having it constant so that she was not settled at any time. So, but I was not aware. And that's the point I wanna make to everybody too, is like, I didn't even know those existed. Like I knew you could have notifications. I didn't know you could have 8 programs sending you notifications and alerts and dinging all the time. So, but obviously it's kind of like Chinese water torture, ding, ding, you know, I mean, it can really hurt people's behaviors, and it was affecting my child, and I'm sure it could be affecting other people as well. So.
Great point. It's, you know, these aversive sounds that we might take for granted could be, you know, very challenging and trigger those unwanted behaviors from our loved ones. So just by taking the phone and turning those alerts off, she can still engage in the behavior she enjoys, right? Going onto those social medias and, you know, playing with her apps, but she doesn't have to be inundated with the alert. So that's a wonderful strategy that you did there. And it's great that you were able to recognize that, because sometimes it takes a little while to recognize like what is happening here. I think we mentioned earlier too about how sometimes our social and emotional health and well-being is tied into our social media use. And Claudia, you wanted to share with us, you know, just some things that were kind of happening to your son through his emotional behavior because of the comments that he was receiving.
Yes, and that's right, Tara. I mean, we all think of like, you know, like the safety of the internet, but sometimes we don't tie that to emotional safety, right? And my son loves to videotape elevators, and he has a Lenny A03, I think, elevator, you know, YouTube, and he wants more viewers, and he does. He has about 600 people following him, which is a lot of them have autism or other disabilities. They seem to have a related, you know, topic that they really like. And he's very proud of that, you know. And he started to have some, you know, emotions. And like Shantae, you were saying earlier that you notice aggression. Well, I noticed crying or just, you know, like pacing up and down. So I noticed a couple of things that had gone away, and what is happening, you know, he's older now. I thought that disappeared. And, you know, we all know about the recurring behaviors, but I mean, I just felt something was up. And, you know, one of my behavior therapists also came, and I said, listen, I'm noticing these things, you know, can we kind of discuss what's happening? And they noticed that you know, they were part of this YouTube, you know, followers, and they said, you know, there's some comments that are not nice. And they kind of started to correlate to when Lenny would cry or Lenny would pace up and down. And he would use some of the strategies that we gave him. He would use his words and say, for example, if somebody made a mean comment, right, to him, he would say, you know, that's not nice. You should try that in a different tone because that's hurting my feelings. So he was using his words and expressing his emotions in this group, but still his emotions were being hurt. So we discussed with him and, you know, we realized that this was affecting him deeper than he could tell us, right? And so we discussed with him how some people are not nice and that he doesn't have to take that. And that's called bullying. That's changing, you know, hurting his emotions, and he can turn off or block some of these viewers. And that's what we did. And he gave them another chance and said, listen, if you continue to make rude comments against me, I will ban you from my YouTube. And so he gave them a little warning and some of them stopped and some of them, they continue, got blocked. So just think of the emotional part too in other things that could be happening that they can't always tell us, right?
Very true. We think about, you know, how can we protect our loved ones from the physical dangers that are out there, but these emotional dangers, they cut so deep and oftentimes we're not able to recognize them until it's too late. So thank you for sharing that. And Zipporah, I want to turn it over to you. You know, as a professional, you've been talking about all the individuals that you work with and a lot of the proactive strategies you've had to put in place. We'd love to hear some more of, like, how did you help them along the way? And what can our viewers also try to do with their loved ones?
Yeah, I think, you know, listening to Claudia and Shantae's stories, I think in both of those, you know, we get really excited when our loved ones or those that we support use social media as a way to kind of connect, which is often a challenge for them. So it kind of erases some of those barriers. And we work really hard to teach them how to set up their technology so that they're safe and, you know, not sharing too much. And we even talk about, like, not sharing passwords and pictures, inappropriate pictures. Like, we try our best to think of everything, but this recent incident with a person who I'm working with, where, you know, we also talk about advocating and speaking up for yourself, just like what Claudia was talking about in her son's situation. And he really wanted to advocate for certain services to be put into place. And he decided, without letting anyone know, to live stream his annual ISP meeting, which is the meeting for all of his supports through his Medicaid waiver. And we didn't know about it until afterwards when he, you know, said it, basically. So that was an aha moment, you know, because again, we're focusing on not sharing passwords and, you know, typing in your address and stuff, but then also setting up in that antecedent phase, you know, not all sharing every single personal thing that happens with you, because that meeting, we talked about address, we talked about, you know, his insurance and all of that. So while we want to allow our loved ones to use these platforms to socialize and advocate and, you know, relax and whatever, we also want to make sure that we are in the early stages kind of looking at every angle possible of ways that they can inadvertently, like, leak out some information that can harm them. So it kind of makes you have to be a super detective.
Very good point, Zipporah. Now, before I move on, do we have any chats or anything from our viewers that we need to stop and
talk? So earlier when we were talking about some of the challenges online, others were sharing, one of the main challenges is trying to get their child to transition from social media to doing other things. And then another was saying having some friends that were making violent threats against siblings. The challenge of trying to help your child with those, like, barriers and stuff. But then, like, especially in COVID, how our online friends have really become close friends. So it's a tough spot to be in, but I'm glad that there's conversations like this to try to bring awareness and provide some resources.
Absolutely. And transitions from a preferred activity such as social media to a non-preferred activity such as a demand, a chore, homework, school, it's very tough. So what, you know, some proactive strategies that we can put in place is, you know, setting that timer, giving your loved one ownership of that timer, giving them choice. Do you want to be on for 5 minutes or 7 more minutes? Whatever you decide, whatever is worth, you know, within your schedule, set that timer. And when that timer goes off, it is a transition from, it's not really you saying it, it's the timer. It's matter of fact, oh, timer has gone off. What I've also found is rather than me taking the item, so if it's a not a computer, but if it's like it's something that's handheld, rather than me, you know, them relinquishing that to me, we put it in a bin or a box or something where they can put it back there. And I let them know, all right, first we're going to do this. And then next we're going to do that. And that's when you get it back. So first this, then that, and then they can access it back. So we just think about those things that, you know, seem so, what's the difference if they hand it to me or they put it in this bin, but it really does make a difference. Giving them as much control as they can. And I think the visuals really help. We know that our loved ones are understanding what we say, but it's paired with that visual oftentimes that really helps them to understand, okay, now I'm transitioning. Here's how long I have to be in this, you know, activity that I don't really prefer, but as soon as I'm done, I get this back. So letting them know when, you know, it's not always just a no, it's a not now and here's when. So just thinking about some of those things. And as we talk about the preventative strategies, we need to also think about what do we need to teach, right? It's so important that we consider the teaching part of this. And Zipporah, you mentioned, we want our, you know, loved ones and those that we're working with to advocate for themselves, but we have to help them to be safe in doing so. And we have to teach them the skills. So we want to talk to you about some netiquette. And these are the norms, right? The social rules while we're online. And there are things that oftentimes as parents, we may not think about. We did not have this growing up for the majority of us. There was no internet when I was in high school. That was not a thing. So for us, like, how do we educate ourselves and how do we work as a unit and a network, you know, as parent to parent to say, what do we do to teach our loved ones? And Claudia, you were going to share just about, you know, a dangerous behavior that your son was engaging in, not realizing the implications, the legalities of what he was doing. So we'd love to hear from you. And more of the Lennyisms, please.
So I have to say that, you know, one of the things that I love about this chat is that, you know, I want to share to everybody some of these things that happened to us in my household, because I feel like the more you hear, the more you go, wow, I didn't think of that. And quite frankly, even myself as a behavior analyst, I go, wow, I did not think of that. Like, he really keeps me on my toes, you know what I mean? Like, so you know, we always have something going on with Lenny, right? So this time, you know, he started to do TikTok, right? And that's fun, and you know, it's great. And I didn't even know that he realized how to do TikTok, or who taught him, or self-taught. I have no idea. So all of a sudden, somebody said, you know, Lenny's on TikTok. I'm like, okay, great. So we discussed some of the rules. What are they? And then all of a sudden he come one day and he says, I am banned from TikTok. And this was unexpected, totally unexpected, mom. And I said, excuse me? So here he comes and he shows me. And there were 4 messages from TikTok. The first one saying, warning, you know, you are using some trademark. So he would, what he was doing, he was copying like Nickelodeon and just putting in them and actually tagging Nickelodeon. You know, so they knew. I mean, he wasn't hiding that, you know, but he wasn't saying this is, you know, property of Nickelodeon, right? So they warned him once, they warned him twice, they warned him, and the 4th time they banned him for a month, right? And it, to him and his brain, this was still unexpected. And I said, Lenny, let's discuss what unexpected really means, right? Unexpected is you had no idea. What do you mean you have no idea? There were 4 warnings, love. And again, and I don't know who was the one that said, you know, I think, you know, earlier in our talk that, you know, can they come to us to discuss some of these things? And that's something I learned from that. Lenny, if you don't have any idea of what's happening, discuss it with me and have this openness. And don't always get them in trouble. Don't always, it's just kind of say, these things are normal, but I can guide you so this doesn't happen to you again. And we had to discuss that this is a legality, and that legally, if he continues to do this behavior, that he never used TikTok anymore. And so this is only a 1 month, and it was, you know, but it could be a great legality. And we see so many other things. And obviously this was small, you know, other kids saying things like a threat, like they said in the chat, could mean you go to jail. And these are things that we don't discuss normally with our kids because we just don't think that they're going to do that, or they think they're going to get exposed. But so it was an awakening of laws that he has to follow. And now he knows, at least we think he knows, but we'll keep teaching. We'll keep teaching.
Right. Yeah. And so you have some legality concerns, but there are also things that, you know, we can really isolate ourselves from our peers, right? And people that we perceive as our friends. And Shantae, you have a story with your daughter, and, you know, she had these friends, she was making friends, she was doing the right things, but then, you know, she kind of engaged in a behavior that was kind of aversive and, you know, unsolicited. So why don't you share?
We're still learning, but Kaylee's learning a lot on all of these things. But yes, she, you know, a lot of times my friends would become friends with her. She has her own friends, but she didn't realize that you can't send them 75 messages in one day, you know, that you just can't keep sending to people, you know, that there's rules, and that you can't, just because you want to keep trying to do that doesn't mean that you can keep going. So she did that. She also had, she also would like be missing an old neighbor, and she would go back and look at their photos, and then she would like all of them, which I guess, I don't know for sure, but I guess it pops it back up to the top of your newsfeed when someone does that. So people were not thrilled that they had pictures from 5 years ago popping up on their newsfeed. And so they're calling me saying, Shantae, can you have her stop? You know, so anyways, yes, there's like all kinds of little things that they don't know, you know, even taking their iPads and their phones into the bathroom with them, you know, talking, like, you know, and they're on Facebook, on their live. So there's lots of little netiquette things they need to learn, I think.
Absolutely. And I see, you know, people are putting some things in the chat. Zipporah, do you want to share some of the things you're seeing, or Flip, if you're seeing anything?
Yeah, it's when we were talking about kind of, you know, setting those boundaries and helping with transition, there was some who shared how they have the schedule and a set place to put the phone. Someone else shared trying not to allow phones in the bedroom at night, because that is a very popular time for things to get out of hand. Someone else is sharing some other boundaries, like no electronics on Sunday. So it sounds like many sharing how they set up those schedules and routines and expectations as far as the phone and computer and technology use. And then someone else shared a scary story about a person who they are supporting that started dating someone they met online who also had special needs, but that person started bullying not only her, but then she became very violent with her guardian as a result. So again, just bringing the awareness to having those open conversations and stuff, so your child or the person you're supporting feels comfortable with, you know, letting you know something just doesn't seem right.
That's great. And that's sometimes hard for them to express, especially when we have a perceived boyfriend, right? Something we've never had before and we've wanted our whole lives, or as long as, you know, we can remember as a teenager, we don't want to relinquish that or give that up, and we make excuses. We really allow for our self-worth to be put down and compromised. And I think really helping them to understand what, you know, who makes us feel good, what makes us feel good, how do we engage in that and surround ourselves with those individuals instead. And I'd love to share now some of our consequences. You know, there are consequence-based strategies that we also need to put in place. And when we say consequences, it's the positive, like reinforcing the positive behavior. So I love how you know, keep your phone in the kitchen at night and you use your alarm clock to get up. I'm so proud of you. That's excellent, for example, or redirecting them, right? How do we help provide the tools that they need to say, this is not the behavior that we can engage in, and teaching them those additional skills? And Shantae, I think, you know, bringing it back to you, talking about some of those management of the consequences and how we help either reinforce or redirect, right? If the behavior is not appropriate, what do we do in those instances?
Well, and I think with some of ours, with some of it with Kaylee, like it became natural consequences because people just blocked her. You know, they can't have 75 messages coming in or 23 a day. So, but then that goes back to what Claudia was saying too, then that becomes hurt feelings because now she doesn't understand, or they'll say it. It's almost like a bullying. Now I blocked you. You know, if it's friends, not, you know, so I think that's natural consequences that can happen because of the way their behavior is.
Yeah, and sometimes that's what has to happen. It's those natural consequences for them to really understand the implications of their own behavior and their own actions. I see we have some chats. Zipporah, do you mind sharing?
Yeah, I was just typing away. So someone had shared, and this is a very common challenge. A lot of the games now, like the online games like Fortnite and Apex and, you know, all of that, they start and you can't, like, there's no pause and stuff like the way games used to be. So a lot of times when you tell your child or the person you're supporting that the time is up, you'll get, oh, I can't, you know, we're in the middle of a mission, and you know, and they really do get a lot of, like, it's a lot of bullying and stuff if you keep quitting or dropping the game in the middle. So they don't want that because that can cause problems. So she was just asking for some suggestions because she was saying the timers don't work. And one of the suggestions that I was starting to type is, it's great to have that timer at the end to say it's over, but I would also suggest adding a couple more before that. So you have kind of like that 10-minute warning and then explaining what that means. So when this timer goes off, this means don't start anything new if you haven't already, you know, and then the 5-minute and then that last one. So, and then also, like, if you're saying don't start that mission, maybe sharing some things they can do, like you can change your costume or whatever, but you cannot start another, you know, mission or whatever, because you're not going to have a lot of time. So that was my suggestion. I don't know if anybody has anything else that they would suggest for that.
It looks like Deidre mentioned lots of video game systems have timers built in under the parental settings, so it would automatically time them out, you know, or help them to not, again, start those new battles or missions or whatever they're on in those, you know, my son, he plays the football games, right? And so if he just stops, they get very upset with him. So he has to, you know, continue out the whole game. That's like, well, when is it over? Like, when are you guys done? But I understand the concerns there. And really talking to your loved one about, you know, recognizing time limits, how long they're in there, how long they're able to play for, and knowing that, again, like Zipporah said, it's at this time, I can no longer engage in those battles or those quests. I can play the game until this time, but I can't engage in something that's going to keep me there. Yeah, that's definitely something I don't think we're going to solve it tonight, but definitely the discussions are going to be important. I think, Claudia, you also had some more natural consequences to discuss.
Yes, and before I go into that, I wanted to say that at least for my son, I have him Google what physical consequences being screen time too long can cause, like, you know, like eye damage, right? The fact that you're holding sometimes to, you know, your urine so that you can play longer, and that could cause like an infection or your kidneys. That has helped a little bit for him to understand that, you know, we only have like 2 hours of this, and him telling his friends beforehand, hey, I can only play from 6 to 8. That way there's no bullying. There's no, I can't go. And the timer stops at 7:30, and he reminds his friends, hey, I only have like half an hour. So if whatever we're going to do, we got to do it now, you know? So I do think that we need to get a little bit more aggressive with those actual proactive strategies, but also like they said, use the technology against them, right? Like the plug is out, like there's nothing, and there's and know that you have to be consistent, and that's hard on us, because if we get busy, I get busy at work, and okay, go ahead, go play a little bit more, right? No, I am busy, and you're still gonna do that, and try to reinforce their behavior. Do not forget, if they do get out, oh my God, you did wonderful. You're growing up, you know, you are playing now something, a soccer, you're doing your chore, whatever it is, your homework is so great. Do not forget to reinforce the appropriate alternative behavior that they're doing. That is so important, in my opinion. We as a parent, I have to remind myself all the time, and I write little notes to myself if I did good or did bad or I could do better, you know, because I think that I also want to improve. And I ask him, you know, Lenny, how did you feel? How did I make you feel? Did I reinforce you? What do you like as a reinforcer? You know, other than just the game, you know. So those ideas there. I did have another, you know, when we were teaching etiquette and natural consequences, you know, my son, you know, we were teaching, this was a while back, we were teaching how to use the phone and take photos. We really wanted him to be happy with the phone because we wanted a way to track him actually, to because he was eloping and leaving us. And I just wanted him to have it with him and wanted him to really want to have the phone with him, right? So sometimes a little bit opposite than some of the other, he could care less. So we were teaching him. So he liked the photos and the videos. But unfortunately, he went to a bathroom and he started to take photos and he wanted to, he's more for the architectural, but guess what? He comes out, he shows his sister and my daughter's like, inappropriate, you know, photos. You know? And of course, here he is with somebody else's, you know, genital in his photo because he's inside a bathroom, right? And you know, of course, the person got upset, came out. Luckily, you know, we were there, we were able to de-escalate the behavior of that person. But, you know, that is a natural consequence. And we also told them, you know, if this person could have hit you, it was upset, you know, you look like a big man. They don't understand that you don't know that you're not supposed to take a picture. You could go to jail. You know, people, there's a lot more consequences. And, you know, and those are the things that I think that we need to really, that's why this chat is so important, I think. For us to think of like, oh, I never thought he was going to take a picture in the bathroom. I tell you, he keeps me on my toes, guys.
Claudia, and I'm going to chime in here real quick. Not just he was in a public space, but I can tell you right now that my kiddos run around with their little TikTok videos, videotaping every aspect of their life. And I'm constantly saying, hey, this is my private space. This is my home. I'm living my life and not everybody needs to see me in my home doing my things. So stop.
Very good point, Flip and Claudia. You know, we have to teach boundaries and, you know, we want them to feel comfortable in their own home, right? Like you said, Flip, she's doing it in her house, but there's an impact of that because she has family members, siblings and parents and others that could be affected by that. So asking those permissions, right? Making sure like what's in the background when I do this? How many people have you seen those selfie fails, whether they got the toilet in the background or, you know, helping them to really understand, you know, the impact of what they're doing. So I'd love to share, you know, some takeaways. I know we've shared some stories here, which have been very helpful, I hope.
I'm not sure I understand.
Sorry about that. I'm still on here, aren't I? I'm so sorry. It looked like I left for a moment. So I think what we really need to look at is knowing that we're not alone, that social media use is starting earlier and earlier. We have toddlers now navigating, you know, the use of devices better than some of us. I think we need to talk about and think about the behaviors, the emotional behaviors and the physical behaviors that can impact our loved one and think about some proactive strategies to prevent that from happening, to have those conversations, to have them repeatedly, right? We can't just say it the one time. I think we need to use the use of visuals to help and remind our loved one what they can share and what they cannot. If you have to put things, you know, timers, for example, or put reminders on the screen so that they understand, you know, these are things that I can't say, these are things that I can't do. And then teaching them those appropriate behaviors too, those netiquettes, what's the social norm here? If I want to keep these friends, if this is what's reinforcing to me, what are my expectations? And again, sharing that with them and repeating that and practicing, rehearsing, that is going to be a, you know, a great way for them to really understand. And then of course, those natural consequences that do play a part in their behaviors. Ultimately, we want to keep them safe from those predators. We want to keep them safe from, you know, law enforcement and things of that nature. Oftentimes, you know, the law enforcement, we think we can tell them, you know, my loved one has special needs, please forgive them. But they don't recognize it at times, and they're not as kind as and patient as some of us might need them to be. So we want to make sure that we are teaching our loved one what is appropriate and what is safe, And I think also, you know, think about what else happens when we use overuse social media, our quality of sleep, right? The lack of exercise, the lack of those real relationships. And I think, Flip, you had a story that kind of tied into that for us.
Lack of, help me out here, Tara. I've got lots of stories. I'm trying to remember which one you're asking me for.
Talk about the reality of withdrawal and, you know, just how that impacted your daughter.
Of withdrawal of technology?
Yeah, well, withdrawal from, like, you know, she had lack of quality of sleep, less exercise, the relationships, just all of that kind of impacting because she just the social media use was intense.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much captured that. So the more that you're online and involved in the virtual world, the less that you're motivated to realize your natural body instincts to go to sleep, that you're tired, that you're hungry, that you need to get out and stretch. And I mean, I think that was just a very general statement, that when we're connected online, we forget these things. There are so many endorphins going, positive motivation, and reinforcers through technology. But as this conversation has gone, they're not always truly good. But it keeps us motivated. So the more you get your likes and your hearts and whatever emojis and comments, the more you're inspired to stay online and continue going. And you can really get down a rabbit hole and stay connected unless you have control and you realize to stop. I mean, earlier on here, someone had, I think it was Molly, said, keep that phone out of your bedroom. I can tell you right now, mine is charged on my bed beside my pillow. I know it's not good. I at least keep it face down. So hopefully that's better than most. But I'm connected to my family. I have GPS trackers on folks. And those notifications, my technology itself is how I know where folks are. So I'm even guilty of this and chained to it, but that goes into the modeling, right? So I'm modeling for my children that just stay kind of tethered and close to your media devices, your internet devices, because they're pinging you. And just like Shantae shared earlier, I've had to go in. I even asked my 14-year-old, how do I stop some of these notifications? Because some of them I don't need, and they were disrupting my sleep. I just need the ones that are going to tell me what I need to know. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yes. I was going to mention, too, I got to interview Temple Grandin, and she was on our show a month ago or whatever, and she was saying she has a new book out, but she was saying that she talked to people in Silicon Valley about how they don't allow their kids on social media and on these because they're so addictive and because of the harm that they can cause. So I think that is something that we're not, you know, I mean, we're talking about little bits and pieces, but I think we don't know. And I remember too, Flip, you had mentioned too, that you had taken your a group of teenagers camping, right? And it took them so many days to unwind before they could even talk to each other because they spent most of it. And we all know it, right? We always spend most of our time, family dinners and all that, where you go out for dinner and even with a mask, or people are like on their devices. There's not social interaction. So it's causing, I don't know, I'm sure it must be causing communication problems and all kinds of.
I wanted to share something for somebody in the chat. One of the things that, yes, and you know, it's a slippery slope, right? Because if our kids do not have social media or do not know how to even play a game, they perhaps are not going to have the social skills that they need to be able to relate to other kids their age and have those actual, you know, friendships, because most of the kids, it's not just your son, and it's not because they have a disability or anything. This is a problem that we have as a society, which is, I think, Chante, what you were saying. This is a bigger problem than just our group, right? Like they do get addicted, and they want that. And I believe there's a part of the brain that lights up and all of that. My suggestion as a proactive thing that you can do right now, if this is becoming too much of a problem, I enroll my son into, just lately, actually, about a year ago, into the Special Olympics, and they have them everywhere. And they are extremely well organized. They have different sports. They have different levels, and you don't pay anything. And I mean, yes, it takes you to take them, or in my case, it took me 6 months to teach my son to be able to do the bus so that he can get himself there while I can go pick him up afterwards or whatever, you know, so you got to get creative. There's in Broward County, I think there's something called TOPS. So there's buses that take certain people, you know, you can teach them an Uber. I mean, you know, to get there or come back. I mean, you know, things like that, but it blocks 2-3 hours of certain days. So I have him in as many sports as I can. There's social groups, you know, card, it's everywhere. You know, there's social groups that are there that hopefully giving them an alternative schedule is what the ABA word is, right? Something that competes with this other schedule that they love, right? Something that maybe they didn't even know that they were going to like. And they have to give it a whirl. It's not going to be the first time, right? Like they were saying with the camping, it took a while, right? So you have to be consistent and say, we're going to try this and we need it for various reasons. And you don't have to say that it is to take them away from the game. You know, you don't have to explain that. I wouldn't actually. So it's just to give you a little bit of an idea of what an alternative schedule of reinforcement is what it's called. So give them something else that they would like to do eventually, that is not the game. Okay.
And then we have someone, Alicia is asking for some advice that, you know, when her son plays certain games that he goes out into a rage, right? He starts to have these emotional outbursts. So are any of you experiencing that? And what have you done to help combat that?
I can chime in here really quickly. So my daughter speaks, breathes, and ingests Disney, Pixar, cartoon type shows. By giving her boundaries on when she can watch those things and for how long, now she's an adult. And she knows what those boundaries are. And she's really on her own now because she's an adult. I don't really have to interject much. She knows when she can watch those things. And prior to that, she would get so into it. And it would just be a constant that she would start behaving in a way that was very, very negative. But now she watches them for a short bit every single day, and she knows when to put it away. And when she puts it away, she's really putting it away. It's not her lived experience anymore. So she can come back to reality. And I think that's part of it, is the disconnect. Am I living this internet life, or am I living in reality? So if you can at least set up some boundaries, time barriers, whatever, so that the person can put that down and say, all right, now I'm going to stick this into a drawer and I'm coming back to reality. I'm going to go sit at dinner with my family. Like you said earlier, Tara, our phones are not involved. I'm looking face to face with people. And yes, sometimes we still have to say, hey, are you living in that experience, or are you here with us? And we have to name it very, very explicitly, like mom, dad, sister, and she'll snap into the reality.
If you said something very important that I want to make sure nobody misses, self-monitoring is what we really want to get them to at the end of the day, right? So there's a setting in the phone that shows how many screen time you're having, and it shows when and where, and you can even say you can only have 5 hours of screen time, and it will cut them from being able to go in there. And the same thing for TV. And it's in those shows, they even tell you, you know, do you want to keep watching? That's almost embedded for all of us, right? So I just wanted to say that was very important to be able to teach them that they have to self-monitor, because we're not going to be here all the time and we're not going to be there, and explain to them when is appropriate, with who is appropriate, and for how long is appropriate, and why. Give them the why. You'll be surprised. They catch up a lot more than what they let on, right?
Thank you, ladies. And because we're right there, we've got about 3 minutes left. Flip, do you wanted to share some resources? I know we have a whole resource page you want to share as well.
Yeah, really quickly, and I know Zipporah and Molly are ready to share these into the chats. So we have a couple of online safety resources that we're going to share. So tips for online safety, and then parent guide to internet safety. We're also going to share the social dilemma, which is a Sundance video that really talks about the connecting and the way social media connects us, but also divides us, and some persuading techniques that social media also ingests. And then we also want to share bridging apps. Shante, do you want to say any more?
Yeah, bridging. Well, this is something 360 bridging apps put together, some things like Life 360 to try to help monitor and track your kids if you haven't done that, or like I would need to put it on my phone. So they provided a video demonstrating how to do that. And there's some other resources that will be available as well. So thank you to them and to all of you. So for being
absolutely
here.
And Life 360 is something that my whole entire household, internal and extended, uses. I have a family 360, so I watch my mom, my dad, my sisters, my nephew, my niece, my kids. So it's kind of that very close family, but I also have a friend's 360, and so we share that as well, so we know where we are, what we're doing, and we can check in.
Oh, that's great. So see, I need to do that. I need to get cool. I'm not cool. Anyways, we want to thank everybody. We want to thank everybody for coming. Thank you, parent to parent, for being part of us. Thank you to Molly and Flip from Partnerships for People with Disabilities, the Virginia Commonwealth University. So thank you. Home and Community Positive Behavior Support for everything that special people that started that group, and then also all of you that are here from them. And also to Tara for Positive Behavior Support Corp, operation that helps lots of us with all of our behavior. And I don't have Zipporah, but Zipporah, it was wonderful having you join us. So thank you so much. You're excellent. So I'm very appreciative that you joined us today. And thank you, everybody, and you guys all. I hope that you got some great information, and we will provide the resources and the links underneath this video, and send everything out to everybody that was signed up for the webinar. So thank you, and we'll see you next time.
Night.
Night.
Night, everybody. Thank you for joining us.